You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Away from home, Hen Dachshund. Hi. Feels like it's been weeks since I last sat here in the chair. The bar stool at Hen Dachshund High for another edition of the Massive Report podcast, brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. So 180 is a number that we love here. 300 is another number that we love. Is this not episode 300? Of the Massive Report podcast. I've been on just a fraction of those, but I'm having a ball. Let's talk about the previous several hundred episodes before I was here later. We'll recount each and every one. No, we're not going to do that because we have a special guest tonight. He's going to be here in a few minutes, right?
Yep.
The president and general manager of Your Columbus Crew. We've been seeking an audience with him here at Hen Dachshund. We've offered to buy beer. We've offered to buy several beers. Tonight, apparently it's going to happen. Tim Bezbachenko will be here. We have so many questions, and that's what we were talking about before we hit the air there, is how can we possibly get to them all? And I don't think we can, so we'll just do the best we can. Mike, Alex, Bart, Patrick, and behind the controls without a mic. And he'll yell occasionally. Don't yell at Tim. It's Sam. I'm Brian from CD1025. Listen to my radio station. Hi, guys. I missed y'all.
Yes. Yeah,
everybody good? Healthy?
Yes.
Happy?
Absolutely. Relatively.
Got a point?
Yeah. Yes. Hey, you know, it's progress compared to what it's been lately, so we'll take that point.
Here's my overarching observation for the game. The thing that sticks into my mind as I was sitting in that awful hotel up there in Sandusky at my daughter's soccer tournament, watching the game on the, dicey Wi-Fi at the hotel, was that we had a chance to salt the game away by just being simple and bunkering in and getting that win, and we just kept going for that Hail Mary. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say you're wrong. I think one thing that we saw is that the offense kind of came in waves. We looked really good. I thought Pedro Santos did a great job filling in for Pipa.
He did.
I thought Akam was very dangerous. In fact, those two together in particular seemed to have a really great connection. So hopefully that can continue throughout the season. And Rubinho looked okay as well. So it's going to be interesting moving forward with how Santos settles in that role. But I'll tell you, that little bit of play that we saw from him, if we can see that the rest of the season, we're going to be in good hands in that role.
Is there something that you can point to with Santos Anivia that causes him to draw more fouls? There are baseball players like Derek Dietrich of the Reds who is always a leader in being hit by pitches, and I feel like Santos is the MLS version of that. He gets fouled constantly. I'm concerned for his health, Patrick.
It's actually something that he brought up after the game in the press scrum around his locker. He talked about how that's his game, and even back in Portugal, He really tried to draw the contact, so it's something that he really, really looks to get kind of stuck in and get those fouls. He realizes that's an advantage for him.
And I just wonder if he's going to be the long-term, or at least long-term for this season, solution at 10 with Frederico Higuain out. Does the fact that he's now that he's going to be right in the middle of everything, I get a little bit worried whether he's going to be able to get through the wear and tear, if he's going to be drawing more fouls there just by virtue of his central location and the proximity to the ball and all the action.
I think he's actually okay with that, though. I mean, most of the fouls that he draws, he's not taking a heck of a lot of contact.
Exactly.
He will exaggerate it so it looks like it's a lot of contact. He's one of these kind of dark arts players who, I personally really enjoy. As a fan of Italian soccer, I love a good dive.
Well,
and he's
like,
top notch.
Like Guillermo would never draw a full contact foul. He would always ride out the challenge, and you knew he got fouled, but he never felt the full brunt of it.
Yep. He had a wrap on his arm, though, taking the PK. I mean, he went down hard on that one. I thought he had a separated shoulder. That's what I thought.
Yeah, that looked bad.
Yeah, after the game, Caleb Porter did say that Pedro is fine, that there's no long-term injury, that he suffered a little bit of a stun there, but you know he's ready to go. So yeah, there's no worries there.
Yeah, it's not like a sprain or anything of that nature. He's fine. And you know, one of the things he mentioned after the game as well, Pedro, was that he's feeling confident playing under Porter, and we've seen that. I mean, we've talked about it all year. I mean, Bart now is all of a sudden his biggest fan, and
I have been. What are you talking about?
Oh, that's right. I forgot these last.
No one has listened to episodes 100 through 280 of the Massive Report.
Well, we may have to go back to the tape. Well, you know, we sent off, not sent off, but sent away with love and warmness and best wishes for the future, Zach Steffen. I felt like, though, that the defense kind of sent him off with something else.
Well, I mean, look, that second goal, let's be honest, very few keepers are going to stop that. That was beautiful. And as a defender, you're not expecting a guy to take a shot
you're
from 35 yards
out. No, I'm talking about the first one, though. Oh. I felt like, again, we were caught doing something we didn't used to do, and that's ball watching.
Sure.
Too many guys surrounding the ball and leaving too much space behind them. Basic soccer 101. And we've done that a lot lately, and now we really can't afford it.
No, we definitely can't, because we don't have him to save us now, right? So, and also, with a new keeper coming into the fold, whether it's Kempen or Bendick, you know, taking the reins from him, they're going to be in a tough spot. They're going to be nervy. They're not going to feel as comfortable and confident, so we can't have these gaps. Now, I'm hoping that the defense will sense that, hey, we have to step up our game. We can't rely on this guy to save us like Super Steffen did and play the type of defense we know that they can.
Well, and I also think it's worth remembering that when Berhalter came in, we had a lot of the same kind of stupid mental lapses on defense that took probably a season and a half to kind of get fully out of our system before that really solidified. So I'm sure, you know, Porter and the guys will get it all worked out, and it's only a matter of time before those issues are resolved.
At the same time, though, you're still looking. This is a banged-up defense, and I don't know that Josh Williams, that it's that's a long-term one, but he's your third choice right back. We finally saw Connor Maloney, and I think that illustrates just how dire the straits were for this team this week. And if you've got the combination of losing an all-world goalkeeper in Zach Steffen, and then you're putting together a skeleton team on the back four, it's a pretty big red flag for me for the rest of the season.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that we could see is now that guys like Josh Williams, he is getting more accustomed to that role. Is it the natural position for him? No. But he is kind of...
Yeah, just watch him try to cross it.
Well, yeah, hopefully we kind of get away from that whole offensive attack, because without Harrison Offal, without Francis, and certainly without Milton, that's not going to happen with our outside back. So it's about how can Porter adjust and use the strengths that somebody like Williams has on that right side and make them come out of the game, not putting a square peg in a round hole. And that's what would be happening, to keep pushing the outside backs forward, and Williams is one of those guys.
Well, with the Gold Cup break, you have a chance to get healthy. So Waylon Francis will be coming back. Harrison Offal has been training, and he'll be back possibly for the Open Cup game.
How's his
week.
Weight, though? I mean, with a jaw wired shut, the biggest hurdle.
I had read that he was 4 pounds down.
That's not bad.
And it was not bad, and he had been keeping up with as much activity as he could. He was on the bike. He was doing everything he needed to do to try to maintain any sort of fitness, but he is back out there training, and it's just getting ready and used to being cleared for full contact, and apparently he will be ready next week for the Open Cup, or that's what they're targeting. But you have a team that should be getting healthier as the month goes on, and the next league game is a little less than 3 weeks away, so hopefully it'll be a little bit better team by then.
Yeah, but later on in the show, I think, if we have time after we talk to Bez, is we need to preview that Open Cup game, because we're going to see a lot of guys that maybe we didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. And we got to go through how that all works, because you have to obviously field a team in the black and gold that has a lot of guys that have a lot to prove. And I think that makes that matchup interesting. Right there, you certainly don't want to lose to a team in a lower division than you U.S. Open Cup.
Well,
you want to show?
Porter said they're going to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. I know every coach is going to say that, right? But I really think that, because this team needs something to strive for right now and kind of get themselves back in order. Because this is a good team. We saw it, right? It's just kind of riding this rough patch out. And, you know, maybe getting some guys some minutes in the U.S. Open Cup will help, because clearly we're going to have to start using our bench.
And that Open Cup game, you know, it comes right in the middle of that break, so there's no problem using the starters to try to get a result because you have another week, and, you know, at this point, you got to keep them sharp. You can't just take a three-week break without any competitive matches that, you know, so getting somebody out there who's coming back from an injury like Harrison or Whalen, but also getting your starters out there and getting them some minutes, it makes sense all the way around.
I would say that for all the MLS Cups or clubs in this year's U.S. Open Cup, I think it's most important for Columbus Crew. I think that obviously they want to get a result in that match, but there are certain things that we want to see to be encouraged by. So there's a lot to look forward to as far as that match goes as well. Any other observations as we swing back to NYCFC? Obviously, their second goal was a corker. Not much anyone could do about that one, but any overarching observations that you had that we hadn't hit on?
I thought we looked better. I thought we were better. I don't think we're where we need to be yet, but there's signs of life, which is good.
I think Mike hit on something a little bit ago about moving away from crosses, and mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure that he'll chime in here a little bit too. Pedro Santos brings some verticality to that number 10 role that Pipa, you know, not known for speed, you know, getting up there in age, but Santos was able to dribble out of trouble quite a bit, and both of the goals came from more vertical, direct, you know, not necessarily counterattacks, but vertical attacks at speed, where you set up a penalty because the defense is undone, and then the second goal is again David Akam driving through the middle, and you have a counterattack on or an attack against an unset defense, and you know those are the ones that you want to score.
Well, and the thing, you know, we talk about the defense. Right, we don't need to do that now because we don't have to come from the width anymore. We can go vertical because, again, we talked about the Santos and Akam connection, right? That's just them going forward. We can play more direct, which then takes the burden off the likes of a Hector Jimenez or a Josh Williams to push up so much. So I think, given the circumstances, that's what you want anyway. We can score goals now going direct, and I know that's not the pretty way and the way some teams want to play, and direct has a negative connotation to it in soccer anymore. But, hey, who cares? I just want goals and points. So if it takes going direct, I don't care if it's pretty stuff. Just get it in the back of the net.
Well, maybe the irony here is that with all the injuries, with all the shifting personnel, that Caleb Porter is going to be able to put his stamp on this team earlier than he otherwise would have been able to do based on having to just sort of use duct tape and bailing wire and make it work, mm-hmm. you know?
And I thought one of the interesting things, too, is Frederico Higuain, you know, the set balls, the dead balls have all run through him. But seeing Pedro Santos, the chances they were creating on those corners especially, going for the either near and far post. Also, David Guzman getting a couple in. But he looked a lot more dangerous in the corner than they have for weeks now.
Well, they were all in-swingers right into the six. Mm-hmm. And how close did the Crew get time after time after time? I mean, John, if it wasn't for the last defender, and credit to New York City FC, it's why they don't give up a lot of goals. How many times has Josh Williams, who can score goals off of set pieces with his head, if that ball would have went another foot, it's going on his noggin and probably in the back of the net.
And David Guzman had almost two near Olympicos mm-hmm. right directly off the corner kick that forced you know, panic saves out of Sean Johnson there.
He also took a nice shot from like way out that forced the save.
Oh, yeah. I think if any team needs to be more direct, it would be this one. Absolutely. Because being less direct hasn't worked very well. It's just as simple as far as I'm concerned. When something isn't working, you got to try something else.
I think if you look at how Caleb Porter has set up his teams in the past, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised that this is how he wants the team to play in spots, because he's talked a little bit about the mid-block counter-pressing. You know, the direct play so that you can kind of drive attacks quickly. So
this mid-block counter press, what is that?
So that's when you try to set up your defense not pressing right at the goalkeeper and not staying in the low block towards your goalkeeper, but really in that mid-third, you want to engage quickly against their offense as they enter midfield, so you can unsettle them as they kind of bring into into that transition from defense to offense and your offense to their to your defense?
Well, and we saw that in the beginning of the year. I believe it was New England. I think the first New England game, the one at home, if I'm not mistaken, it seemed right away they would go into a 4-4-2, or maybe it was Dallas, Cameron, one of the two. They would go into a 4-4-2 block right away as soon as Dallas or whichever team it was would get the ball. And we saw that they had Zardes and Higuain pushing up and creating problems for the goal for the opposing goalkeeper, right? So maybe that's something that we're going to have to see more of. Porter did that in that game because he saw a weakness in the opposition, said, this is how we can exploit it, and it worked. In fact, it was probably the best complete half we've had, even still this season. So, you know, maybe that's what it'll take.
Yeah, that was a 1-0 win against Dallas.
Dallas, every yeah, okay.
And at no point did Dallas look threatening through the entire second half, even when they were pushing for a goal because of that mid-block defense. And so, you know, Columbus over the past year and a half has been an excellent defensive team. I think that they're a little bit unsettled with how Caleb's trying to play defense. It's a little bit different than what Greg did. There's also the chance, you know, when you're playing your fourth, third string right back and your third string left back, your defense is going to take a hit.
Yeah, no question about it. We got to take a break. Tim Bezbatchenko will be here. Bez is our special guest on the 300th episode of the Massive Report. We are back in a moment, live from Hendox. Welcome back to Hendox on High. It's a Monday. It must be the Massive Report. But I'll tell you what has never happened before. It's the 300th episode of the Massive Report. Let's give ourselves another hand.
Hey.
Another hand. And we decided to go big. The president and general manager of your Columbus Crew SC, Tim Bezbatchenko, is here.
Woo!
Yeah. Good evening, Tim.
We're not worthy.
All right. You, of course, grew up on the mean streets of Westerville. That's where I've lived for almost a quarter century now. I've raised my family there. I imagine you, 13 years old, on Fourth Friday, out in front of the Dairy Queen, right by Hanby Elementary, checking out the girls. Am I accurate?
Yeah, I will. Gosh, girls at 13. Yeah, I guess so. You know, it's.
You did take your soccer seriously.
I was worried about, you know, which flavor Dairy Queen I was licking.
Right.
But no, I used to drive. It was actually a far ride on the bike from the east side of Westerville.
Oh, not the east side.
Sunbury Road. And you used to have to make a hike all the way into town.
Side.
Yeah.
You were in shape. That's a long trip.
It is a long trip. We used to stop at a place called Sour Records, which is this fantastic record store.
Is it gone? Yeah.
I think all the record stores are gone.
No, actually, you know, Columbus, when you have some time, I know you're busy, but I'll give you a guide of record stores you need to go to.
Yeah.
What's the best record you've ever purchased at Sour Records? You remember?
At Sour Records. I think it was just Nirvana.
Yes.
That was sort of the era. Kind of went.
What a great record store that was. All right. Strike all the questions. We're going to nerd out about records with Tim. That's what we're going to do. So you went to DeSales, right?
I did.
You guys win a state title with you on the team?
We won a title, yes.
What year was
97.
That?
97.
97. Wow. What do you remember
1997.
About
I remember, well, first it was, we had been in Division One my freshman year at DeSales, you know, back and forth in terms of the number of students or athletes that you have. And so DeSales was always on the cusp between Division One, Division Two, and we were very disappointed to be dropped from Division One to Division Two at the beginning of the year. But then we just got together and said, hey, we just got to win it. And I remember, you know, I was starting in the team, but I was still one of the smaller players. And we played the hardest game was actually against Kettering Alder in the semifinals, because often the semifinals is actually more difficult a game than the finals, because you're playing regionally against Dayton and Cincinnati, which has a little bit better.
I'm nodding
soccer.
My head like I
like, you know, you, you seem like you know what I'm talking
too.
About.
Yes. Yeah.
And
that
then
97
you,
Kettering team, that was a powerhouse.
Who could forget them?
No, but what I'm saying is that it's all my high school right soccer experience was not that. I mean, that's rarefied air there.
Yeah.
You're playing at a high level.
Well, it was before the DA. You know, the Development Academy nowadays, The best players are not allowed to play high school soccer.
Wow.
But we, you know, we expected to play Bay Village, which is Brad Friedel's high school up north.
Wow.
But they got eliminated by Gates Mills Hawkins, and that's what we played in the final. Ended up winning 3-0. But the best game of that tournament actually was we were down 3-0 to Bexley High School in the regional finals. Came back 22 minutes, scored three goals in 22 minutes, won in a shootout. So anyway. I haven't been able to tell that story to anyone that would even remotely care.
Except for DeSales.
As a St. Charles grad, too, and I normally do not condone any success for DeSales, but at the expense of Bexley, we will let it slide.
Yes, and I just family just moved in on Sunday to Bexley, so I haven't really shared that with the local
the neighbors.
Yeah, the neighbors yet.
Yeah,
I'm not sure anyone's going to remember that.
I overheard you talking. Forgive me for eavesdropping, but were you just at a T-ball game?
My son, it was his very first ever T-ball.
How old is he?
He's 6, and I was just saying, and I feel like I apologize for being a little late, but I couldn't miss that.
You gotta be there.
It was one of those things I expected to see, I even brought his soccer cleats to wear those, or they'd be sitting in dirt kind of drawing and just watching them with the ball. They didn't play t-ball at all. They played dodgeball the entire time.
Dodgeball.
And I'm like, gosh, if they had done that, maybe I would have been a professional baseball player, because he came sweating. Dad, I want to go again. Why do we have to stop? You know, he didn't, you know. So anyway, there's another practice on Wednesday.
That's way better, because I just remember that sound, the clunk of my bat hitting 2 inches below the ball every time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, I just can't get that out of my head. Well, it's so great of you to be here. We have so many questions. Obviously, you've done this job in Toronto. You guys hoisted the cup. I feel like, looking back over the last few months, even you could not have envisioned the portfolio that was going to be put in front of you when you came down here, because of the unique circumstances of where the club was. Is it leaving? Is it not leaving? You come in January, you have no time. You're at a skeleton staff. What has surprised you the most, and what have you learned the most?
So I think the portfolio of things that were put in front of me is actually why I'm here and why I wanted to come. And obviously it starts with the fact that I'm from here and first club, being able to come and help run your hometown team is a dream of any young man, or even boyhood dream in a lot of ways, even though the team didn't really come on till later on. But you know, in a lot of ways, Toronto, the build was over, and we were going through a cycle on the roster where there was going to be some turnover and designated players. The team was epically poor before our regime kind of came in. They had never made the playoffs, always been a big spending team, well-resourced, sort of a country's team. And I just felt like this opportunity presented another opportunity to build something, and build something great. And the ingredients were there, right? So you had a team that, in Columbus, that was in some ways fighting relevancy, like a lot of the charter member teams. And I've seen it firsthand on many, you know, summer nights are great in Columbus, but I've been in the rain, you know, early on in the year, at the end of the years, and I've seen games on you know, in the shoe when, you know, it was, what is it, 58 yards wide,
yeah,
roughly. but I felt like it was relevant as ever because of what you all did, the Save the Crew movement. And so it elevated, forget whatever everything else that's happening in MLS across the country. In this market, it was elevated and sort of jumped up 5 notches in everyone's sort of book of what they want to experience in Columbus. And I think that matters, because at the end of the day, clubs are local. They're about the people, the community. Soccer is local. You look at a team like Liverpool, which is global, but at the end of the day, it's about, you know, their neighborhood. You know, their neighborhood team in Liverpool. So I just felt like the relevancy was there, the opportunity to expand, obviously, my experiences on the soccer and business side, use my sort of legal background and the way the club is going to build a training ground and the way that we're going to build a new stadium downtown. So there's just so many things that were there. But in terms of what I've learned, I've learned that it's a bigger project than I even thought. I think the ownership has learned that, and if we're speaking honest, I think we all knew what the club was and what it wanted to be, and I think there's obviously this view of what the fans are, but at the same time, if I'm speaking honestly, I think that we thought that the support this year was going to be a little bit more in terms of attendance, Even earlier on in the year, I think we were surprised after the first game. It sort of tailored off, but we didn't have the runway in August, September, October, November to sell tickets. Obviously, I wasn't here. The leadership didn't even formally come on until January and didn't. They took operating control, but they didn't take formal control until just about a month ago. So in terms of actually buying the team, you know, the signing the agreement. So I think that there's just so many elements at play and are still in play that make this a unique project and one that's it's really a, you know, it's once in a lifetime.
Absolutely. And I think I can't imagine doing a job like that. And the biggest challenge for me in any project is, well, what do I do first? What do I do now? Prioritizing this many different disparate things that all need your attention. You've got to build a good team. Mm-hmm. And you're in the process of doing that. Mm-hmm. You lost some people when we went through the transition. How are we as far as building your team in the front office?
Yeah, I think the first thing, you have to understand who you are and what you have. And what we need to understand the situation and be honest with it, because you'll never move forward if you're not honest with what you have. And we have a coaching change situation where a coach was not let go because of poor records. In fact, it's right. The opposite.
Yeah,
he was in some ways, promoted to the national team, I think is the way a lot of people would look at it, right? So he did a very good job mm-hmm. in Columbus, built a system, built a style of play that we all love in terms of being, you know, purposeful and in possession. And the national team and the federation recognize it. So you have that dynamic where they're leaving and they're taking the coaching staff. And then you have the front office and the business side who literally get gutted, you know, from and rightfully so. It was an organization by his own, by a previous owner who wanted to take everyone down, or at least some people down. And so walking in, you have to know what you have. And I think the first few months have been evaluating what you have on the business side in terms of staff, because you can't truly figure out what you need until you understand who you mm-hmm. have, what you have, the values of the people. Are they aligned with your values? Same thing on the soccer side. You know, having Caleb in place, and he's a winner, obviously won before. Pat Onstead, a winner, won many championships before. So I felt like on the soccer side, we quickly, once we got Caleb's first team staff in place, his coaches, I felt like we had a group that understood what it took to win and what it takes to win in MLS. And so it sort of kind of shifted, my priorities shifted a little bit over to the business side, because there's a lot we have to do to prepare for the opening of the new stadium in 2021, without taking obviously eye off of soccer. But I think we're learning what we have on our roster now after mm-hmm. multiple injuries, you know, a transition in leadership. Coaches, you know, players go through transitions just like anyone else, right? So you have a boss who leaves, or a dynamic that shifts at work. It takes time for players to understand what are the key aspects of the coaching sort of philosophy. And even though what I say about, you know, Caleb and Greg is, I think the end product in a lot of ways, we want it to look the same in terms of the baseline possession-based soccer. But how you get there is going to be very different from Greg, and Caleb. Caleb wants the players to make more decisions on the field for themselves, wants them to have a little bit more autonomy. He wants them to, because he believes that creates some creativity. And there's some players that are fit that mold and that philosophy, and then there's some players who won't, and we'll figure that over time.
How busy do you think you guys will be this summer with that transfer window coming up?
We're definitely going to be busy. Probably the busiest teams in terms of maybe not making a final move that shows up on the roster. Hopefully it does, but we'll certainly be active in terms of figuring what's out there, what fits with our needs. I mean, it's you have to do a lot of the work. Not all the teams. There's a lot of teams out there, not to knock them, but they kind of wait for things to come to them. I'm a big believer that you have to generate the opportunities for yourself. So you have to be active on the phones. You have to be constantly reaching out and connecting to other GMs daily, right? Even if just to say, hello, what's, you know, what's going on and you know, such and such market, how are you doing, how's the wife and kids, just to connect with that general manager, that technical director, so that when you're starting a conversation later on, you don't have to start and catch up on all that stuff. You can hit, hey, you know, what would you accept for such and such player, right? Those conversations need to happen quickly, if, especially during a summer transfer window. So you need to be priming the market and establishing those relationships beforehand. And so I guess that's a long way of saying that we're going to be active, but it has to make sense, right? And not just in the short term, but in the long term. And so a lot of what we did at the end of the primary window was really to set ourselves up for this summer and for next year.
And so when you were in Toronto, a lot of the moves that you made were pretty big moves by MLS standards. So, you know, your Giovinco's, Josie Altidore's, players like that, that Toronto FC was able to bring in. And Toronto's always been a team that kind of brings in big-name talent. But in recent years, we've seen some teams at least shift towards kind of young talent that can be resold at a later date. You know, your Atlanta United's and honestly kind of Columbus Crew's at this point with Zach Steffen. Is that the way that you're going to be kind of looking at things if you're making a bigger move, these younger players? Or are you going to kind of go maybe more of an LA Galaxy, Zlatan Ibrahimovic kind of style? Or will it be kind of on a case-by-case basis?
That's a good question. You know, it all comes down to the vision of the team. You have to reflect your market. You have to reflect, you know, the ambitions of the ownership. So in Toronto, our ownership was extremely ambitious. We had a starving fan base that hadn't made the playoffs. Yet we were very well resourced. MLSE is one of the most largest, and most successful mm-hmm. sports organizations. Most people don't know that. Toronto Raptors right now are if you see what's happening up there in Toronto right now, it's obviously that will help TFC, because the bottom line from TFC is shared with between the Leafs. So the best thing for TFC is for the Leafs and the Raptors to do well. But seriously, that will help fund designated player acquisitions, mm-hmm. right? So anyway, to get back to the point of that's what we needed to do in Toronto in order to save the fan base. People were leaving in droves, and we needed to make a big splash. But I don't necessarily think that's what fits for Columbus. I do believe that the league has shifted. Even when in 2013, when we were acquiring those players, young players from South America weren't necessarily looking to MLS to be a stepping stone to Europe. I think it's only happened in the last 3 to 5 years. It's happened with the introduction of targeted allocation money, which allowed you to kind of think differently about your DPs, because you could maybe go get a Zlatan, mm-hmm. who was a TAM player. Right, believe it or not, he was a TAM player when he first came. So you can think differently about, and we don't need to talk about whether or not, you know, mm-hmm. he should have been a TAM player if there's anything that. But he was a TAM player. So you can think, hey, maybe I can go get a star player who's in his mid-30s and not use my 3 slots. Because at the end of the day, you need to find players that help you win games and win you trophies. That's the first and foremost most important thing. And then it's, is there someone that connects with your market? And I got to say, in Zlatan in LA, that probably helps. We had LAFC coming in, you know, new kid on the block, sexy downtown stadium, and the Galaxy, right, had not, you know, done well with their coaching decisions, at least the coaches that they had brought in terms of winning, and they needed something, and I felt like Zlatan really fit their mold. So I think for us, it would be more in a long-term approach, especially toward 2021, getting players that will be with the club for a while, grow with the club, and certainly bring in players that have increasing market value. But I do believe that you can, given that you have 3 slots, you know, maybe it's a mix of, it depends on who's available, but is it two players on the younger side and 1 player on the older side? But I would like, over the next 18 months, bring in 3 players that would qualify as sort of the traditional designated player, which is, you know, TAM and DP mixed between 500 to 1.5 million. Everything above 1.5 million, all in between salary and transfer fee, is not to geek out here on salary cap stuff, mm-hmm. but that's designated player territory, right? In my book.
But you want to use the slots. You're
absolutely
okay.
So Yeah, we want to use the slot. The question is, what do the slots look like? How? I mean, that's the fun part. Is what is the identity of the club, and you know, who will help us win games?
Hey, look, geek out. That's why we're here. Geek okay. out all you want. Yeah. This is stuff we want to know.
At us. Look at us. Now, so, quick question. We had a debate
look at
on
us.
This show a couple of weeks ago, and it's not really germane specifically to the crew because Jossie is now a DP, but in your world. What is the hardest player to find, a striker or a goalkeeper? When you go out into the world market, what's the hardest to find? Because we just lost
per dollar.
Zach, or just the talent. I'm talking about just the talent. Because Zach Steffen is such a sublime talent, and those don't grow on trees. Is that harder to find than a game changing striker, or is that even a
no? Goalkeeper, it's a more difficult position just because of most, other than Pat Onstad, who we have on our staff, which is nice to have. You know, a lot of people didn't play the position, so you're dealing with something that you just deep down you can't say, hey, I've been in his shoes. I mean, I'm 5'7". I've never been, unless you're Jorge Campos. I've never been
coaching kids. It was like, the number one question was, do you want to play goalie? And if the one out of 11 kids said, yes, I'll play goalie. Yeah, fine, you're the goalie. It's difficult when they're 6 years old,
Exactly. I mean, you learn through osmosis and goalkeeper, and you know how to evaluate. I know what is a goal that a goalkeeper shouldn't give up, obviously, in the game, and I know all the – we have our scouting template. I know all the things that you should see. So you have to have people on your staff that can evaluate it. And so I wouldn't say for per dollar the goalkeeper is the most difficult. I mean, someone like Zach, is it took 2 years before he really came into his own. So ideally, same with DPs, would we like someone who comes in and develops into someone that you could not only win trophies with or get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but you sell them at the end of the day. That's the ideal model for I would say most all positions. But I think the hardest position to find, it's not goalkeeper, it's not striker, it's center back. Center back is...
Why is that?
It's because there's a couple of reasons. Well, when Manchester City visited Toronto, we played an exhibition friendly, and their coach, Manuel, we sat down and we had dinner, and we were sitting around, and he asked us, you know, what's the most difficult position to find for you guys? And I told him it was myself and our coach, Greg Vanney, were there. We both looked at each other and we're like, well, for us, it's center back. He said, us too. He said, it doesn't.
So that's why they buy every good one.
He said, it doesn't matter if you're spending $14 million or $14,000 on the player, the center back is the most difficult to find. It's such a mental, the center back position, people don't watch it, but you have to be mentally engaged the entire match. And nowadays, the demands on a center back are that, not that just you're tackling and you're being vocal and you're the commander in the back, but it's actually that you can pass out of the back.
Right.
Because the game has evolved, and the offense starts from UCR, the Columbus Crew, the last few years. You saw New York City this weekend. Ability to play out of the back is paramount, and if you can do both, defend and play out of the back, then you're going to be worth millions in our league. And so every club in the world is looking for those players. And so to retain them or to acquire that player is very hard because we're competing with all the clubs globally.
And you talked about Manchester City and these other clubs globally. Are there any clubs globally that you look to as kind of an inspiration for what you want to do with the Crew?
Well, is there a salary cap in any other league?
No, not
from roster construction, but in terms of how to play, positional play. I mean, certain things. You go to Hoffenheim and you look at a club who has maybe not the most well-resourced club, but the way that they've created technology as a key piece with SAP, which is their database system. It's headquartered in Hoffenheim, and the technology that they use at their training ground, right? You take pieces from that. You go to Arsenal and look at what they're doing on the sports science side of things, mixing data with, you know, Arsene Wenger, but even the whole philosophy of the club under Ivan Gazidis and the group has been to use information and technology. So what you do is you want to go around and visit all the clubs and kind of see – what are the pieces that you want to take, but overall it's very hard to just say we want to be this club, be like this club, because everyone's so different. Certainly the style of play, positional play, Pep is someone that you just have to watch and see that he's the way that he can evolve and has evolved from you know, Barcelona to Bayern.
You talked about technology, Tim, and it popped into my head that a team in baseball that's having a lot of success this year, Tampa Bay Rays. I don't know how much you look at other sports, but you know, baseball uses so much in terms of technology and analytics, perhaps more than any other sport. I think MLS and soccer in general is moving in that direction as well. Do you guys talk about that stuff a lot?
100%. All the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, every day. It's not at anywhere near the point of sort of sabermetrics of baseball and repeated events. I mean, we have such a large space.
Right.
The number of no two players are identical. I mean, it's just baseball's repeated events, whereas soccer is, it's more about patterns and getting people in a position so that then they can then react and be creative. But you're looking at the ability for the cameras now to pick up the movements and create the XY coordinates is at a new place that we haven't seen before in soccer over the last sort of 18 months. So what they do in basketball, this company called Second Spectrum in NBA, which it's really incredible where they can, through the data, you can see what looks like a pick and roll. And then you can understand if the player is off by a foot or two on the floor. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, and so through the data, you can kind of see who's in a position, who's out of position, how much they are. And in soccer, you know, once you can do that, but you need the cameras to understand the XY coordinates. And so that is we're getting to a tipping point with soccer where maybe we can do that in the box, right? Defensive positioning, when the shot's taken, where are you positioned? And, you know, you look in the computer screen and maybe there's the moving circles, right? And if you're red, if you're out of position, you're green if you're in position, based on where the shot is at the time, where all the other offensive players are. So that's just one area of data and analytics where the space is evolving. There's obviously the physical load and the metrics on the toll that a game takes on a player,
yes.
the ability to measure
yeah.
the load
yeah.
in the periodization of players. So what is your week of work look like on a sort of a two games in 8 days, like a normal week where you have a game on Saturday, Sunday regeneration, Monday's off, then you have game day 4, -4, -3, -2, -1. Play like that with occasional weeks off. Rarely will people get injured other than contusions or, you know, fouls and kicks. Mm-hmm. But it's when you have the three games in a week like we had recently, where you're three in a week, a break, and three in a week, that's where you're going to see injuries. And that's where you need the load management, or CCL or U.S. Open Cup that's coming up, being able to manage the load. That's where you're seeing data and analytics really come to the forefront.
Now we're nerd now.
Yeah, and you talked about being a Tam and Gam nerd, and of course MLS as a salary cap league, and it's novel among most, you know, leagues in the world because of that. We've got coming up after this season collective bargaining agreement. Also, you're a lawyer. Obviously, I don't want you to necessarily speculate on what, you know, what to expect from that. But does that affect
not allowed,
the way
I'm getting in trouble? You can't say anything.
Exactly.
I'm just going to nod.
Does that
and
even
smile.
Evaluate? Does that change how you evaluate your decisions, knowing that that's something looming in the, you know, not too distant future?
Yeah, I think you have to understand that there's a collective bargaining expiring. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then no, seriously, and then you have to understand that things may be different, they might not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really it. But you can't, since you don't know, you don't want to base decisions on things that you don't know. So mm-hmm. you know, I feel like you assume kind of status quo, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of one approach. And then as, you know, as information comes, then you deal with it. But there's nothing, you know, we don't have anything right now.
Have any of the situations, you know, the injuries that this team has gone through, have they, you know, changed your approach to what you're looking for in the market, you know, in the transfer window this summer or after the summer? Have they accelerated any timelines, or are you guys still kind of sticking with the game plan that you came in with?
Well, I got to check. I pressed Tim to find out today if this is the first time that two designated players have gone down with mm-hmm. season-ending injuries in any season. It's got to be the first, maybe second time it's ever happened since 2007 when DPs were introduced. But, yeah, you have season-ending injuries to you know, your, two of your best players, or most biggest contributors over the last two seasons. That's gonna change things. It should. If it doesn't, then I would question how you're making decisions. I just feel like it might not change the timeline, but you have to understand what the group is now. Again, knowing what you have. So what does the group look like without Milton? What does the group look like without Pipa? And then make a decision based on that and decide whether or not it's something that you need to make improve of in the short term, right? How hard are you going to press for this year? Or how is it this? How can you solve those problems, those issues this year and in the off season, so that the team can continue to improve? I mean, one thing we tried to do in Toronto is that each decision we made, each player who came in had a purpose, and the purpose wasn't just to fill a hole or try to be a replacement for a player that we were getting rid of or something like that. It was all about how the players connected to each other. So without Milton, Artie is going to play different, and Gasty, and I mean, they're all, once you take one piece out of the puzzle, it becomes a completely different puzzle. And that's what people don't really necessarily think about, is how they connect. So one of the important people we picked up at was Marky Delgado, who, a lot of people don't think that he's a top-class player, but he's one of the best players in the league at keeping it simple. 1-2, we called him a connector, right? Because you have Michael Bradley, who takes up a lot of touches on the ball, and you have Sebastian Giovinco. And how are you going to get the ball from Michael to Giovinco or Altidore? It's get a player who has great vision, but who plays simple, has no ego, and is all about serving others, right? And then that's what a connector, and so you have to have these roles and figure out how everyone connects. So how is bringing, David Guzman in, how is he going to connect a little bit differently and maybe give us an ability to play a little more direct because he can spray the ball with both feet, and when you pick up a guy like David Akam? And how is, now that Higuain's not there, how can Pedro Santos come inside and take advantage of his ability in the pocket? Because he's very good in the pocket. He can draw fouls. I think you saw a little bit more from him than you've maybe seen in the past. Because you're sometimes limited based on the players in the field. So you always got to figure out how the pieces connect to each other, and so when two big large pieces like that leave, and it's three with Zach, then you have to reevaluate.
When it comes to, you mentioned at the beginning all the things that you've been taking on since coming on board, right? And then we bring up the CBA. I'm going to throw another big one out to you. Is the, whether it's short term down the road or maybe 4 or 5 years down the road, is a reserve team like a Crew 2, is that on the docket or is that being considered?
Let me take a step back. This club to be success over the long, be successful over the long term, a sustainable success, we have to have a strong player development model. So that's first and foremost. We have to be a leader in player development. We need to own Ohio, own the Midwest. Yeah, so we need to take a step back, say, what is it we want to be? How are we going to be successful? In order to have a very robust player development model, you need to have some system that develops the pros in waiting through your system, teaches them to be professionals. You also need to have a system that helps the current pros that aren't getting the minutes get pro minutes. And right now we're loaning our players out, and it's been actually pretty good. Our opportunities have been pretty strong. I've been impressed what Pat's been able to put together in terms of our loan relationships. But that's you're not relying on your own system. They're not furthering their knowledge of your system when they go away. Some players need that. Some players need to go away to college, sure. and live away from, their friends and family who are local. But many players just need to be, in the system, be in the shadows of the pros, of the first team. So I would say, yes, unless something else comes up, any other opportunity that replicates those things I just talked about that we need, then we would certainly be looking to bring in a USL team. Question is when and where,
right?
Do you have it in the same market so that all the players are accessible to the first team staff on a daily basis? Or maybe do you put it in a different market in Ohio so that they learn to be independent? And especially if they're, as we've gotten younger, these are pros that probably are most of the best players are not going to go to college, or only going to go to one year. Let's be honest about that. And
absolutely.
So do they need to go away, live in Cleveland, live in Dayton, live in wherever we'd place the team?
Westerville. That's where you need to put the U.S.
Yeah. So I mean, that's something down the
next
road.
Next to Otterbein.
Yeah.
We were playing Otterbein.
There you go. Yeah. I figured it out.
Perfect.
Yeah, so ideally, yes. I do. The question is when.
Tim, so talk about that a little bit. You know, the academy system was dissolved. Sporting Columbus, you guys have been really active with kind of using them as a premier partnership. Is there any chance that you maybe bring a club like Sporting Columbus back under the Crew SC umbrella and kind of look at maybe moving forward to kind of creating those younger players and creating that kind of strong academy system that may feed into that potential USL team?
Well, so let me just talk about what we do have. So we have our academy program, which starts at U14. We have U14, U15, U17, U19. And that is free. It is no pay to play. It is trying to find the best players that have pro potential and Division I potential for some players. And then there was, along that track, they used to have the Crew Juniors, which was a pay to play model that was like any other local club, although there was certainly a strong connection to the Crew. A few years ago, and that was started in roughly 2007, 2008. Last year, about 18 months ago, they decided to switch Crew Juniors and sort of make it private, and it's Sporting Columbus, but there was a relationship with the Crew. Recently, we've been evaluating the benefits of having a pay-to-play model that obviously brings in some revenues, and there's a good base of players that you can find through that system. What we're finding is some of the drawbacks of that is that other markets and clubs feel like they're competing with your club.
Sure.
So clubs in Dublin, in Worthington, in Chillicothe, they are on an ever-weekly basis, they're competing with the Columbus Crew. And around the world, that's normal because there's hundreds of – in a team like – or a city like Columbus, there would be probably 5 to 10 pro clubs that even – First division, second division, third division, fourth division in Germany, maybe fifth division, right? And so that would be okay because they're all on the same sort of equal opportunity from a pro perspective. But when you have these smaller clubs and they're playing against the Columbus Crew, pay to play, and I just think that the philosophy of what we're about may not be the same as what the team's about on the other side of the pitch, right?
Sure.
So we're really looking at terminating that sort of pay-to-play model under our umbrella, and then taking a step back, hitting the reset button, and then going back to the market and saying, hey, we want to be the driver of youth soccer in this market. We should be. We're responsible for growing the game. And what does that mean? It means helping with coaching education, helping with referee development, helping with curriculum development. How do you build a session for a U10 coach? Come watch us do it. It doesn't mean it's better, but at least it gives you some ideas, right? So I think that's what we want to be about. It's about connecting, reconnecting with the clubs locally, providing, being a resource for the coaches and their staff if they want it, being a resource for parents, providing a dream for the players to play pro in Columbus. That's what we should do first. Now, down the road, 3-5 years from now, is there a model where we're involved in the youth space? Sure. You know, Barcelona's, putting clubs all around the world in Columbus. There's
sure.
Barcelona.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, there probably is, but we have some internal healing to do on the academy side because we need to compete with the larger markets. We need the millions of people in Ohio and in Detroit and in Pittsburgh to actually want to play for the Crew to compete. So we're competing with the player pools of the New Yorks and LAs and Chicagos.
How quick do you think, do you feel that there's kind of an arms race in the state of Ohio with FC Cincinnati getting a DA Academy, and you feel like that there's a chance that maybe Columbus Crew SC could get a DA Academy online within, say, the next 5 years?
Well, we have a DA. We have a DA team
okay,
now.
Okay.
Yeah, we have two DA teams. The biggest question now is kind of what's the next step for the DA.
Okay.
So just taking a step back, the first sort of development academy was the U.S. Residency Academy down in Florida, and that started with the 81 sort of Landon Donovan, sort of my era Landon Donovan. Kyle Beckerman, that class,
Beasley.
Right? Beasley, DeMarcus Beasley from Indiana, right, Fort Wayne, just retired last week.
Yeah.
And so that was the first class. But the whole idea of the DA was let's create these residency academies all over the country. And MLS at the beginning didn't, you know, wasn't the major player. And then in 2007, the league mandated that every team had to start an academy at the, I believe it then, it was the U16, U18 levels. And obviously that's grown over time as owners have looked around the world, seeing that to create a sustainable business model, you need to have players that are coming through your system. And then you play for your first team, and then maybe you can sell them. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening around the world. Mm-hmm. Rather, it costs less to develop players than it does to go and buy a $14 million center back, right? Or a $8 million goalkeeper, right? So develop them. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of the big question about the DA is MLS teams are now at the forefront leading across the board the USSF DA.
Okay.
And so how can we improve that competition so that MLS teams are playing game in, game out? So, for example, in Mexico, the youth teams travel with the first team, play the same club on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So how neat would it be for Chicago Fire to come and play the first team, the Crew, at 7:30, but you could go to over to Matt Free Stadium or a new training ground and watch the U14s, U15s,
right.
U16s, U17s all day long. I mean, that'd
be
exciting.
Sweet. Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to be moving from Columbus Crew Stadium, the first soccer-specific stadium in MLS, to a new soccer-specific stadium. What are your thoughts on that? And in light, as MLS is sort of kind of going to yo-yo back and forth in terms of the importance almost in soccer-specific stadiums, it feels like, because you look at teams like New York FC and others that might not be in there. And maybe you don't need to elaborate on those other teams, but what's it going to be like moving into this new stadium and saying goodbye to Mafre?
Well, first off, I will comment on I didn't have to.
I saw Tim.
This is not a CBA question. This is just
this is working.
My opinion on soccer specific stadium. I don't think it's less a priority. I think it's critical to the growth of this league, and I think the league office does as well. That we continue to build stadiums that are built for the game. You know, there are exceptions, and Atlanta clearly is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they also built that stadium with soccer in mind, and I think Arthur Blank and what he's done is he's had the example that he set for us is that you treat MLS team on par with the other team that is hosting, you know, the venue is hosting. So that's the most important thing. So if you go to an Atlanta United game, it feels like Atlanta United. I mean, they are not a second class tenant. I mean, clearly they are doing right, you know, good things. And I think it started with Seattle as well, right? Seattle, they treated them just like a top-tier team. So to answer your question, I think soccer-specific stadiums are critical to our growth. And then for us in this market, given that we have the oldest soccer-specific stadium, we've all talked about how it's great to be at the fairgrounds, but soccer is a sport where people want to go to a pub before the match. It's a global sport where people want to go and then, you know, get together with their friends. And downtown Columbus is growing, and it's where the everyone's moving. It's on the river. It's in a neighborhood that's built for sports, and so it's just going to be fantastic for our fan base.
Are we still looking to break ground in August? Is that still the game plan?
Yeah, I mean, if you go down there, they're already, you know, sort of moving dirt. But in terms of actually breaking down, we're breaking ground. It's probably going to be late September.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Well, you've had to find a place to live for your family, and we already have a place for the new stadium. But have you had a chance to shop around at the other new stadiums? And have you found one that maybe stands out for, in your mind anyway, over the other ones that you just like, yes, this has what we're looking for more than the others?
LAFC's new stadium is remarkable. Obviously, the amenities that they provide are very LA. And the pool on the upper deck is
wait, we're not getting a pool? It
rains enough at Crew games already.
Yeah, if it's gonna be a pool, it's gonna be in the locker room or something. It's a tunnel club. No, but there's the intimacy of it. You know, the ability to keep noise in. The ability to open it up 24/7 or 7 days a week, so that people can get together, have a drink there. The ability to, you know, is there space for TIFOs? Safe standing for supporters. I mean, really, it's and we want to hear from the fans. This is about creating a stadium that's for the people who save the crew. It needs to be iconic for the city of Columbus. It needs to feel different from everything else in the Arena District, yet still have, you know, some feel like it's not out of place. So there's so many things that you go to, but I would say Kansas City is one of the first stadiums that have a lot of sort of the new era premium soccer specific amenities.
I thought Minnesota looked great on TV the other day. I really liked the end lines and how vertical and on top of things people were. The idea that we cooked up on this show, we got to let you go. They're telling you that you got to go home. I don't know. Somebody said you got to go. Are you having fun? Do you want to stay? Do you want another beer?
I've got questions about officiating.
You guys are probably bored of me. So.
No, absolutely not. I could do this all night. The one idea that we cooked up a couple of weeks ago was because of the unpredictable weather. Are you familiar with Betty's Bar there near the ballpark?
No, Betty's Bar.
It's this tiny little bar right by where the new stadium is going to be.
It's a great dive bar.
Tiny. It's like maybe the size of this
room.
It's
there right now.
Their hours are call them to see if they're open.
Right. So what we thought would be great would be for the crew to build a covered tunnel from Betty's front door to the stadium. That's the amenity that I'm asking for. I don't ask for
a lot. You
want to
stay dry? Is that the... Or you just
what? Just a tunnel for the fans to gather and chant going from Betty's to the stadium. I think, go to Betty's, have yourself a tall boy, and then you'll get it.
Mm-hmm. Or is Betty's is that where it's going to start, the parade?
Yeah, that's where it should start. Yeah.
Spin art? Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
It's right before the railroad. Right before you go under the railroad.
Got it. All right.
He doesn't know whether I'm serious or not.
Well, you better hope.
I don't.
The more...
We took Ben's for a ride.
The more... On Thursdays. The more it started out as a not serious idea, but the more we talk about it, the more I'm serious
about
the Betty's Tunnel.
Look, when you go there, you'll get it.
So Tim is dying over there because he obviously knows where Betty's is. So that should be his last task.
I don't know if Tim is serious half the time. That is something you have to figure out if you know where.
Let's not tell him about the... Is it Thursday or Tuesday at Betty's?
Thursdays.
Thursdays. All right.
Seriously, though, I did take it back, though, in terms of the surveys. We're gathering feedback on what the stadium needs to have. Your feedback's critical. So if there's something, a tunnel that looks like a tunnel, or it goes underground.
Just a very small, high-speed rail.
We need to know now. We need to know now. So don't tell me a year from now. We need to know
it's
now.
It's too late for the tunnel.
What about a light?
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. I like the way you think.
Speaking of a year from now, where do you think we'll be in a year from now? You know, we've talked about kind of the challenges and how some of the challenges maybe are bigger than were anticipated. You know, where do you think we'll be this time next year?
That's a tough question. I mean, I think right now we're really still in an evaluation mode. Clearly, we next year from now the club will be staffed up, you know, staffed appropriately and both on both the business and soccer side. I think on the academy, I think hopefully we're getting close to a place where we make a decision on the USL team. Clearly, a year from now, we'll know where the CBA sits, so we'll know some of the directions on the roster and how you can start to shape it as we move into the, you know, very critical season of 2021 for this club. I think that we'll know how the city of Columbus has responded to the Save the Crew movement. Right, and the business community and the soccer fan base with everything we're going to do on the club side and creating the affiliations I talked about earlier. So I think a lot of these things we'll have a better sense of where we're at and what we still have to do. There's a lot of work between now and then.
Well, it's exciting, you know. I mean, I imagine you get up every day going, okay, what's today going to bring? Whether it's an injured player that you need to account for. Or a goofy tunnel from a dive bar to a stadium.
That's the benefits of this job. But I gotta Before we go, I do have something for the group.
It's in a bag. It's in a clear bag.
It's a sorry, Tim.
It's like a jersey.
I'm holding up a jersey for all the people listening. I'm holding up a jersey for the 300th episode. Yeah.
It is a massive report on the back where the player's name would be and the number 300.
All right.
Oh, dear.
Wow. 300. Jersey. Tim, that is awesome. Yes. Thank you.
Oh, that's
do we take turns wearing it every week?
Yeah, we're going to have to frame that sucker.
I guess we should frame it and probably
I'm
put
sure
it here.
I'm sure we'd get more than one if people... People would
fantastic.
Like their individual version. So.
Absolutely.
Anyway, well, don't
congratulations on the 300.
Thank you, Tim.
Episode.
Don't build a business plan around selling Massive Report random jerseys. But we appreciate it. That is a beautiful gesture. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thanks for
having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Tim Bespachenko, the president and general manager of Woo! York Columbus Crew. We talked about everything tonight, from Sour Records to... the future of our club.
Hey, wait a minute. Look, he's wearing a DeSales 6-time state championship.
Oh. Wow. Drop the mic. Drop the mic, too.
Full circle.
Drop
the mic. One second, we'll take a group picture with the jersey on. Thank you.
All right. Well, Bart, do you have to talk about your bag before we go? I don't know how you can possibly top that.
Oh, well, I don't know that GCG bag, even the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand, I don't know that they can top Tim Bespachenko, but they're certainly strong advocates for Tim Bespachenko and the new Columbus Crew regime. And if you'd like to find out more about the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand, go to at GCGBag96 on Twitter, Facebook / GCGBag96 or GCGBag.com. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report. It's a thing!
You know, as I was sitting in that miserable hotel up in Sandusky for my daughter's soccer tournament on Saturday night with the rain pouring down, the most beautiful sight I saw on my laptop was
those beautiful
the bag
girls.
Banner.
Yep.
Bag banner. Thank you, bud. Mass Report was brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. Are we giving away tickets to the U.S. Open Cup match, which we didn't even get to? That's okay.
Yeah. That's
fine. We do have another segment. I don't know how we're going to do that. All right. Maybe if Tim buys another round, we can do it. All right, Bez, the next round is on you, so we can do the next segment. We'll be back right after this on the 300th Massive Report. We are back here at the Massive Report at Hen Docks on High. Wow, Tim Bespachenko. I could talk to that guy all night. He's so smart and seems to have a guy in his job needs to have an idea of the big picture. And I really think he does. And he has a lot of big pictures to keep track of. I really feel like we're in good hands. I feel good about it. And he gave us free scarves. So, you know,
that's really why we're here, is the free scarves.
Free scarves. This is the 300th episode of the Massive Report. And all of you guys have been so kind to me. I really appreciate you having me here. I'm having a ball being here at Hen Docks. My beer is almost empty. This is probably it for me tonight. But I always look forward to having beers with you guys and talking into microphones about your Columbus Crew SC every Monday. Thanks for having me, and congratulations to everyone involved.
Cheers to that.
300 episodes. And to that end, the original Massive Report host, T-Bone, from 97.1 The Fan, is here. It was great to meet you. We had never met. And I feel like we have a lot in common because we're in the radio business. Which
well, first of all,
no
I
one
agree.
Understands.
It is great to meet me, and I appreciate you saying that.
It is.
No, it's actually what's actually fun is that this has to be the only soccer-related podcast, at least at MLS, if not the U.S., that has like two local radio hosts that have like hosted it. That isn't affiliated with like a radio station. You know what I mean? Like there's radio station podcasts, but that's kind of an interesting thing. Like we didn't know each other because of this. I never knew that I wouldn't be doing the podcast for the entirety of its existence. And then life happened, stuff happened. And then I found out you were coming on board to be a part of it. And I'm like, well, this is great. We've got radio pros taken care of. This is awesome. So yeah, it's great to have you be a part of the family, even though you've been more a part of it of late than I have. That's very cool that you're doing things here, so I appreciate that.
So, T-Bone, what do you remember about the beginning?
I remember nobody wanted to do this but me, and it was all my idea. And
whoa.
No.
Whoa.
I'm just saying that because Chris Lamacchia, who was one of the other guys who was on the first episode, is sitting right to my left, and he also wanted to do the podcast. So
I wanted to do it, but then I found out it was a terrible idea.
It is a terrible idea. Terrible, it continues to be a terrible idea. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. 300 episodes later, it's still going, so that's good.
Wrong, right, yeah. You know what they say, if you make a mistake, keep making it.
Exactly.
Or something like
yeah.
that.
Just
it's exactly
it
right.
Over
it's definitely not
again.
The definition of insanity.
Eventually it'll work out.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think it's working out pretty well. Well, it's great to have you guys here, and it's great to even be here and wearing these scarves because it wasn't that long ago that it was all very much in doubt. We were talking before we started this segment that the thing that really boiled my blood about the whole moving this team to Austin was that my kids grew up in Moffray Stadium. This was our family activity. Watching my daughters fall in love with Will Trapp every week and just, oh, Will, every time he touched the ball, it was exciting for them. You know, it's so many memories, and to have those taken away was unacceptable. And I thank you, T-Bone, very much for your efforts. Of course, the Save the Crew people. We did it, and that's why we're here.
It was pretty incredible, too, because it's appropriate that we're at Hendock still because that's where – at least for me and Chris, I don't know, you could speak to this too, but that's where for me, like the Save the Crew stuff, it got started at Endeavor as well, but we came here, you, me, Patrick, Sam, we were on like a group chat.
Yeah.
And I came here because that night, that next day after the announcement came down at like 11 o'clock, that's where like we said, well, let's just get together and hang out and cry in a beer and just hug each other and talk. And there was this twerpy little asshole named Morgan Hughes who was like hanging around.
We're glad you said that.
Who was just walking around like, it's not over. It's not over. And I'm like, it seems pretty over to me, pal. And like, he was like, no, we're doing a rally. And I was like, all right, well, tell me if there's the rally. I'll come. And then it went from there. Like, but honestly, like, I wouldn't have thought to come to Hendox if not for that. And I had very little to do with Save the Crew. Like, those guys did an immense amount of work. But I'm just saying, that was one of those things where, like, I wouldn't have thought to come here if it wasn't for this podcast and all the connections we made through that. So it's just kind of cool that because of this podcast, I got to have a little tiny part of knowing some of the early origins of the Save the Crew stuff. And I think that's just a testament to how this podcast, despite some of the conference call jokes that are made by some other podcast somewhere else that I don't acknowledge.
Isn't it failing? I hear
it's failing. It's very much failing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's a testament to how this podcast is, you know, a big part of the crew experience for a certain segment of the fan base. So that's cool.
The weirdest thing about this year, I think, is just, you know, I did not think that we would be having a 300th episode, to be totally honest with you, when this whole thing started. And I thought last year, okay, well, you know, we'll just record remotely because who cares? You know, it doesn't matter. This thing's all going to be done and over with. And, you know, we're all going to have to, you know, become Clipper season ticket holders or something like that. No offense to Clippers. I love the Clippers. But, you know, we were going to have to find something else. And it was so weird. And to still be here is really kind of surreal. And even with all these injuries, like, the season is really kind of messed up at this point. I don't care. Like, I literally don't care. I will get pissed off on game day, and I'll go home, and I'll be like, yeah, we lost, but we lost, and I wasn't expecting us to lose any games in 2019, so I'll take it. That's a good point, Alex.
And I do. I enjoy watching the games, and that was a rough stretch there because there's nothing worse than watching a team that cannot score. Yeah. And now you see the seeds of a team that's figuring it out again. And hopefully we can get right during this break. We have Pittsburgh Riverhounds coming up in the U.S. Open Cup. I think that of all the cup appearances, and we've won the cup, but I think this particular cup appearance is so important just to get guys that are coming back like Awful and these young kids to see what we have. What are we going to see when we play them a week from tomorrow at Moffray Stadium? as far as the crew goes, what kind of lineup are we in?
Well, like I mentioned in the previous segment, in the press conference, Caleb Porter said, we're going to take this seriously. So I think he's going to throw out a full lineup. Maybe a tweak here or there, getting some younger guys some minutes. But in the end, with so much time off, it's not like they're having a game on a Tuesday and then they have a game on Saturday. It's not how it's going to work. They have a whole other week off. So why not play your whole group? Go all in. And maybe that's the momentum that this team needs that can then carry over to the regular season, which is really what we want to see right now. Okay, it was great to get a point at home, but we want to get to the point where we're collecting 3 points at home all the time, and maybe this game can help us get there.
I was looking at the table yesterday, and you just look at the names, you go, well, this is bleak. We're down towards the bottom. But the points are so compact that a lot of ground can be made up very quickly. I'm still optimistic and realistic at the same time. This team has a lot of challenges, the injuries being front and center, and the fact that we don't want them to go all in for this season, I don't think, because there's just too many question marks. This team needs to be built for next year and especially the year after when we get that great new stadium.
I have a question for the panel. Anybody feel free to jump in. Do you guys feel like the injury to Federico Higuain, while catastrophic, might actually kind of start the rebuild process a little sooner and thus maybe put this team on a track to, not that they were competitive, but I don't think this current group is going to win a championship as assembled, and especially not with Zach leaving. So I think this could – do you guys agree with that? Or what?
Well, it was awkward. No one wanted to bring it up. I appreciate you bringing it up, T-Bone, because in all seriousness,
that's what
I do. The same thing.
I just say awkward things, then I walk away.
Especially after watching the game on Saturday, because they were different, as we talked about. They were more direct. And as you mentioned, Mike, that's not the trend that the world is going towards, but sometimes you just need to do what you need to do. And I think this is a group that needs to do what they need to do.
Well, it's
and
one
if
of those,
it works,
yeah,
great.
I mean, absolutely. But with a guy like Higuain, sometimes, and a guy like Stefan as well, defenses go, hey, we got Zach Stefan back here. We can take the foot off the gas. Offenses go, we have a guy like Higuain. We'll let him do it. And, I mean, we saw it with teams with superstars. Just when the first couple years with Beckham in the league, there's a bunch of bums around him, so he said, let's just give Beckham the ball and see what happens. Well, now all the players go, oh, crap, we don't have Stefan. Oh, crap, we don't have Higuain. Now I have to play like a professional, and it makes them elevate their game. So, again, it's taking making lemonade out of lemons, right? And I think that's important. And in anything, whether it's life, whether it's sports, it's all about what do you do when the cards are against you? How do you come back when your back is against the wall? And this is a perfect time for the crew to do that. And I think with Caleb Porter, he's the type of coach that can make those kind of things happen because he brings fire out of guys. He makes guys want to run through walls for him. And I think with these young guys that go, okay, we can't rely on the two pillars that we've had these last few years, it's my turn to step up now.
Yeah, I think this team's going to get weird. I think that when we come back from the break and we have those two home matches and then we have the stretch run, I think that this season will go in ways that we couldn't imagine. And again, to your point, Alex, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
And we're going to enjoy the ride. And the weather's going to be nice. It's not going to be that Atlanta game, which I still just shake my head at. Well, we won, so maybe that's what we need. But, it's going to be an adventure, and it's part of the process. Pittsburgh, we have tickets for that. MassiveReport.com, the Twitter feed at MassiveReport. There'll be a little trivia question, right, Sam? You can win this. Correct. Are you putting the trivia question up there now? Are you just looking at pictures, or what are you doing?
I'm looking at Instagram.
All right. Fair enough. All right. I like how Sam is getting called out on the podcast. By the way, Sam Fahmy, he gets a lot of credit. I don't want to make him have a bigger ego than he already does. Oh, yeah. But it should be noted that Sam is, and I'm sure you've already said this, but Sam is like sitting at the board in the same spot that he's done this for, God, 8-9 years now. So, like, Sam, when you see him taking photos, like, just throw all the money in your pocket at him because he deserves it.
Because yes,
Sam is
well
absolutely
said,
in a big
I'll
applause
take some
for
Sam,
him. Because
Sam
this
does
podcast
a great
wouldn't,
job. Makes
it wouldn't
sound
exist without
great.
Him.
Absolutely. We're not just, we're not just passing a microphone around. We have plenty of microphones. We sound great. Thank you, Sam. You do great work. We appreciate it. Are we done? I got to go home.
In fairness, though.
I'm in trouble with my wife at this point.
Oh, dear.
Home.
In fairness, if
you wouldn't be the first host to be in trouble.
No, that's never happened. I don't know what you're talking about.
If you have extra money to throw at Sam, throw some my way too. That'd be nice. I'll take it. He's got this ego a little.
Can we use your promo code when we throw it at you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know either. You'd have to listen to some other podcast.
All right. We're out of here. Are we here next week?
Hard.
We are not here next week. We are in the break, so we're back in 2 weeks at Hen Docs. And hi, thanks to Tim Bezbachenko. He was so great tonight and appreciated meeting him. As I mentioned before, we're in great hands. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. And we'll talk about what's coming forward. And we'll talk about that Pittsburgh game on the 11th. Thanks for listening to the Massive Report, and thanks to Hen Docs and I.
Hey, welcome to the Massive Report podcast. My name is Smitty, or T-Bone, or J.D. Smith, or God knows what else you call me. But Degenerate T-Bone's another one. Thank you, Sam. We're doing a little after-hours thing where we're hanging out at Hen Docs like we used to, and Patrick Golden is here, who was part of the original podcast crew. And Chris Lamacchia was here, who was part of the original podcast crew. And Ralph Schudel is here, reasons unknown.
Yeah. I just show up to things.
And we pour a 40 out for Matt Bernhardt, who is unable to attend.
Yes, and yes.
Actually,
that's right.
I don't have a 40, and I would prefer to save my beer.
I didn't realize Alex had his headphones on, so Alex Stanek is still here as well.
I am, yes.
So there we go.
And
so
there's
now,
more of a reason for Alex to be here.
That's yes, I agree.
Just second generation.
Marginally. I was here for episode 200, so I've got some.
So was I.
Yeah,
I mean, I showed up for that too.
Am I Gen 3?
You are. Yeah, you are okay. MR 3.0.
There you go. That's good. Yeah.
Okay.
And you guys, that was the era. I thought you guys were doing a video podcast the last time I came on, but it wasn't. It was just there was a conference call, so I was very panicked because it was all on Google Hangout, and I thought, are people looking at me? I don't want to be seen. And then you're like, no, this is just for us. And I was like, even worse. Because now we're all looking at each other, and it's not going anywhere. We're sitting there staring at each other.
Wait a minute. That's like a metaphor for the Master Report podcast. Right? We're all looking at each other, and it's not going anywhere.
But it's gone somewhere. It's gone to 300 episodes. And I think it's appropriate that we discuss how that feels to be at episode 300. Chris, I'll start with you.
Oh, God, I knew you were. First of all, I'm glad to be here back at Hen Docs. I think the last time that I was here was for episode 200. I take that back. The last time I was here was the
October 17th, 2017.
The last time that I was here on good terms was episode 200.
I do want to clarify, because I called Morgan Hughes a twerpy little asshole on the regular podcast, and I just want to say, he is a very athletic and fit asshole, but he is in good shape. He's not twerpy, and that was a poor choice.
I was just reading Twitter before I came on, and apparently he has an injury.
Yeah, what happened?
Did he pick up a knock?
He picked up a knock. Apparently it was a hip injury playing sports.
Was it basketball?
He did not disclose.
Maybe it was softball, but no, it was basketball.
Let me just say a word about Morgan, which no one's done, so I think it's time someone actually talks about what he's doing. But that's a good impression. Ralph Schudel, the Rich Little of the Massive Report podcast.
Of the Ralph Schudel show.
And the Ralph Schudel show. But Morgan used to be on this podcast.
Yes.
And I actually came across him when I was listening to a podcast, and I heard somebody reading ad copy in a way that I had never heard before. And I thought,
oh God,
this guy is either completely a genius or completely insane. And it turns out,
jury's still out.
Jury's still out.
Jury's still out.
So, but either way, Morgan is not here. But Morgan, you are always, even despite this other podcast you're doing now, which whatever, you're always welcome, at least in my mind, with Massive Report. So there you go.
What was I talking about before you interrupted me?
Oh, yeah.
You
good terms.
So you're back, and
my memories. Yes. I remember that I made a fool of myself a lot. I yelled at a lot of people. I was angry often on Monday nights. At the bar. So really, other than the at the bar thing, not a lot has changed. I just got a kiss from my best friend.
Oh, right. Wow, that's nice.
Love you, buddy.
There's some sexual special attention here.
Yeah. So really, like I was saying, not a lot has changed other than the fact that I don't yell at a microphone on Monday nights anymore. I just kind of yell at the dog and people on the internet. So if I've yelled at you on the internet, you have this.
You
to
don't
think
say
about.
You're sorry because you're not. I'm sorry. Not you're all. Not sorry. Well, that you know
those
people
on the internet are wrong. They, aren't they?
Yeah. So I was talking to Clintonville celebrity Bob O'Shaughnessy a couple of days ago.
Nice.
About people on the internet that are wrong, and or no, sorry, about people on the internet that are assholes. And it's okay to be an asshole on the internet if you're correct. But if you're wrong, expect to be be called out for it.
I agree.
And for those of you watching at home, everyone at the table just nodded in
that's
agreement
it.
With
we
that
all
statement.
Agree, yeah.
Yeah. So if I've ever yelled at you on the internet, it's not because I'm an asshole or you're an asshole. It's because you were wrong.
But both of you could be assholes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Squares and
I just
rectangles.
Want to clarify yeah. that. Okay. Got it. Right. Doctors and dentists, we understand.
Crazy Dave, I'm looking at you.
I thought he was here. I thought, did he show up? I didn't see him walk behind me for a second. Okay.
Yeah. No, I would have left the room.
Hey, do you remember who we talked about on the pilot episode of the podcast?
The one that actually got aired or the one that didn't?
Oh, yeah. Sam, if you can't, can you hear? Can they hear what you said? Yeah. Okay.
I'm loud and obnoxious.
Okay.
So, no, I don't. Which one?
It was the episode we did before the MLS draft. And we were talking about whether the Crew were going to draft Ethan Finley or Justin Miram.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait. No. Was it? No. It wasn't Ethan Finley or Justin Miram. It was. Rich Balchin.
Rich Balchin.
Or Justin
Rich Balchin.
Miram.
Yes.
Yes. It was
Ethan
Rich
Finley
Balchin
was
or Justin
next
Miram.
Year.
And they ended up
yeah.
drafting Rich Balchin.
They got them both. Yeah, because that was the first time that I said Rich Balchin was a five-tool guy. He was a utility player that could do anything. That didn't work out so well for me.
Yeah,
he could play a lot of positions, and then he got injured, and then
yeah.
They took their toll, and he is having a soccer journeyman experience.
He's doing well for himself, though.
Yeah, I see him pop up on Twitter, and I don't know the background of his history. He seemed to have some challenges, and so I'm happy that he seems to have found a place.
I will say that Rich Balchin is the reason that I'm probably not welcome on press row at Red Bull Arena anymore, because when he scored that crazy goal at the end,
you
of
were
that,
there too.
I was in, and
that's
I
right.
and I broke the Cardinal press box rule. I cheered.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that.
Really,
you're not allowed
really
to do that.
Loud.
Yeah.
And I caught myself, and I reined it in very quickly. It was like a 1.1 second cheer, but I still broke the rule.
But at Red Bull Arena, I mean, it's outdoor press box, so yeah. It kind of feels like you're sitting in the stands.
And I was off on one end, you know, because
they put me
way down on an end. So I'm sure that, you know.
I'm sure the stands were packed at Red Bull Arena, because last I heard, that is in the media mecca of New York City.
Yeah.
So there's
the
no
New
way
York, Erica.
It couldn't be full, because that stadium is always full. They definitely don't tarp off the top of it now, because that's they so support New York. Anyway, I'm not bitter about any of these attendance things at all.
Nope,
not at all. Let me ask you guys this question. I'm trying to go through in my head all the places we've done this podcast, because we did it at we did it at Fadeau at Easton for a decent amount of time. We did do it at the now ill-fated HSH bar,
mm-hmm.
Hooligan bar.
Yep, that's two.
Three-legged mare.
Three-legged mare. We've done it here at Hendox.
Did it at my house like a couple
times.
Did
it
at Sam's
house.
We've done it at Sam's house. And we did it at Bob's Country Bunker.
Yep.
I feel like there's one more. Did it?
So, by the way, if you don't know Bob's Country Bunker, Bob Stein, who is not here, but he also helped start this podcast.
He's
and
the
actually,
father of Mass Report.
He's the father of MassReport.com. He started that. Bob was a guy who, if you've listened to this podcast, you know this, but if you're just tuning in, Bob was a guy who used to do stringer reports for the AP, which basically means he would go to games, write a report for the AP, and then send it to them, get paid a fee, and that was that. He's a journalism professor at Columbus State. At least he was. I think he still is.
I think he still is.
Communications,
yeah.
Yeah, sorry. And so he had the idea to start Massive Report, and that's what we all were doing initially, was writing for Massive Report. To various levels of success. Chris Lamaki was way more successful at it than I was. Patrick was way more successful at it than I was. But that's why I said, hey, let's do something I like to do, which is talking writing.
Do you know of Chris's successes? The biggest success, just retired.
Just retired?
Yeah.
Just retired, Chad Marshall.
Your favorite guy.
My favorite player of all time. My favorite. Speaking of being an asshole on the internet.
Okay. I do. Here's the thing. I still love Chad Marshall.
I know that you do.
All right.
And
I just want to be clear.
Because this is an after-hours thing and like seven people are going to hear it.
Are you going to rehash this? Because no, I don't. Just, do people
I'm
know?
I'm going to say something I've never said before.
Oh, all right.
Chad Marshall is a very good soccer player. Chad Marshall is probably the best MLS, purely MLS defender to ever play purely in MLS. Chad Marshall should have the MLS Defender of the Year award named after him. Success at your profession does not preclude you from being a mean fellow.
Right. And there
from,
is...
From yeah.
Personal history there.
Personal history there. Although we'll I will say that my favorite memory of Chad Marshall... Here's some inside baseball for you guys. The my favorite memory of Chad Marshall is we were together at, I believe it was Bar Louie at Easton the night that Osama bin Laden was killed, and we both saw the news at the same time and kind of went, yeah. So that's
was
my,
this when you still liked each other, or
it was when there was no animosity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't awkward when they looked at each other and they're like, "Did you?"
And it wasn't just Chad and I.
I thought maybe the death of Osama bin Laden like bridged a gap between you two. Where it was like, you know what?
We weren't at
Twitter wars. Be bygone. Let's
was Twitter even a thing back then?
Osama's dead.
Oh, it definitely was.
yes. And to clarify, Chad and I were not at the bar together. We just happened to be standing next to one another at the bar.
That's very interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah. So, yes, Chad had a standoffish demeanor towards the press, and especially the press that said that he didn't try hard.
Whoa, I didn't say Chad didn't try hard. I said the team didn't try hard.
I guess Chad took it a little harder than some of the other
personally.
Players.
Well, yeah. This is something, though, that's very interesting that I learned early on in doing this. No, and this is true, and it's illustrative there. To your point, not every guy who is a good player may be personally someone you can get along with.
Right.
Also, with great access to these players, there comes a tendency for writers, and it happens of all stripes, of all levels and sizes of media, that people say, you know what, I like that guy, so I'll pull this punch. Mm-hmm. I won't say what I feel. And I do think that from afar, having witnessed it since I've been gone, I think Mass Report does as good of a job as anyone in the league of saying, look, love Federico Higuain, but love Will Trapp, but in this game, this. Like, I think that is something that Mass Report, and that's a credit to Patrick and Alex and all you guys and Ralph who are, you know, writing for this site, that you guys still do try to be journalists as best as, you know, everybody's not a full-timer at this, but you guys are working to say, look, I like that guy. He's a good dude, but he's not getting the job done.
Oh, that's unfair. I'm a total cheerleader, and I don't write, and that's why I don't write, because I love Chad Marshall. I would hang out with him at the awards shows, the awards ceremony things, the casino night. Him, Chad Marshall, and Eric Gehrig, I would just, like, hang around those guys. And they were so cool. And I am kicking myself now because Bez was here, and I should have been like, can we get a freaking casino night again, please? It was so much fun. We need to bring
I think now I blame you for it not happening.
So, gentlemen, I have a question for you. Speaking on interactions with players, maybe if we want to go around the table, if we've got time for it, but if we want to go around the table, what was your favorite interaction with a player since you've been a member of Mass Report?
I got this one. Will Hesmer. Will and I had the opposite relationship that Chad and I had. Will is a stand-up guy, class act. Could have been the world's worst goalkeeper. I still would have loved the ground that he walked on. But he wasn't. He was a really good goalkeeper. But my favorite interaction with Will ever, probably my favorite interaction with any pro athlete ever, other than the time that I almost knocked Thierry Henry all over, because, yeah, that happened. Anyway,
he was good at his job.
He was. He was very good at his job. He just wasn't looking where he was going. Neither was I. And we, yeah. Anyway, one of the crew fan, a hooligan kid, was a kid at the time. Is now a damn near grown man. It's weird to see you guys grow up. His mom died, which is terrible to be. I think he was a senior in high school at the time, and his mother died. And Will somehow, William Hesmer. Somehow found out that this fan, nobody fan, absolute face in the crowd fan, that his mom had died in the week before the game, and knew that this fan was, or saw this fan at the stadium, somehow found out about it, and literally, final whistle, the game blows, Will turns around and immediately gives the kid his jersey.
Oh, wow.
And then walked, you know, and did the thing that the players used to do where they would come over to the Nordeca and salute and all that. And this was when I was credentialed, and I saw all this happen. In the locker room, I went and talked to Will about it, and I don't remember the interaction. I don't remember quotes. I couldn't tell you what I asked him or what his response was, but I just remember the sincerity on Will's face and the empathy in his voice as we were discussing this. And his message and the story that I wrote was, I cannot imagine how that would affect me. But then to be able to put that off and come to a soccer game a couple of days later, it was mind-blowing to Will, and it was amazing to see, you know, that level of player reach out to that level of fan in that way. That's my favorite interaction, other than almost knocking Thierry Henry over.
That's a very good one, and that's very touching. I like that. Do you have one, Patrick?
I don't have anything nearly as touching.
Yeah, sorry
as that.
Sorry to
deflate
the... Oh, I've got one that's going to ruin all that good vibe, but go ahead with yours, and I'll get to mine.
People know, I've never met a player that I was like, yeah, we could be friends, you know. It's like, no, I'm aloof and I'm standoffish. My favorite interactions are players who take the time. So, you know, maybe not favorite interactions. I really enjoyed talking to Milovan Rosevic in 2012. Always great quote, and just chatting about the game. You know, sitting down, he just loved to chat, and he would just go on and on. Augustine Viana was a genuinely nice person.
I've heard stories of, I think it was of him, that like he would just invite random crew fans over to his house for like cookouts and just be like, oh, we're just hanging out, right? That's what you do, is just hang out with the fans. And it's like, wait, what? You're a pro soccer player and you're just inviting people over to your cookout.
And so, you know, we both still follow each other on Twitter, and I mentioned something about Save the Crew, and he, you know, responded to me and asked some questions, and like, you know, what's the deal with this? And, you know, talking about the Save the Crew thing, and, you know, he is like, obviously, like, that's not right, or that was the gist. And my favorite interaction with Augustine Viana is, he was talking, and his English is pretty good, and he paused and was like, I am sorry, I am not good at speaking English, so I'm sorry about the interview. And I'm like, you're doing just fine. So he was very, very. And one thing that just happened this weekend. So, you know, Zach Steffen had his lap of honor and had some things after the game. And his he wasn't back to his locker room until pretty much everybody was out and you know, everybody's filing. And so I came back and I had a chance to talk to him. And, you know, I said, hey, you know what? Good luck. You won't need it. You know, you're a great guy. I'll be rooting for you. Wish you all the best and all the success. And he gave me a genuine handshake and thanked me. And you know, our interactions were relatively few compared to somebody like Andrew Erickson or Pat Murphy, who's at training every day. But, you know, genuinely nice guy. And so, easy to root for. So those are a couple ones that stand out in my mind.
Yeah, and it should be noted, too, not everybody has kids, but Zach Steffen, I have twice taken my girls and gone down there to get autographs, and last Saturday we did it again for his last game because they're huge Zach Steffen fans. And, I mean, there were 300-400 people waiting for him after that game, and he was there for at least an hour afterwards, signing, taking pictures, grabbing, like, kids give him his cell phone, he turns and takes a selfie with them, gives it back, signs an autograph, signs two autographs, signs for like one person, and then he moves to the next one. This is after playing a whole game, after having all this emotional stuff, and it's his last day of work.
Yeah,
like, I mean, my last day of work, like, cease, like, I'm deleting the last email that got sent to me. I'm like not paying attention to anything for the last 2 hours. Like, he's still there doing all that despite the fact that he's done and he knows what he's doing. And yeah, you couldn't be more right about him.
So he was coming in. So he was finally, I finally tracked him down. I was like, oh, he's on the field, and I was told, yeah, he's coming in. Player availability. It's open locker room. So, you know, I'm being ushered into the tunnel, into the home locker room, and you know, it's kind of tight. There's a bunch of people around there, and I'm trying to wait. And then eventually I go in. I look behind me, and Zach's behind me. He's like, I was trying to wait for the guy who, you know, he's trying to get to his locker. And so it's a 20-foot long, you know, hallway, and he stopped four times for pictures for autographs. So I think it was Rico Clark's son, you know, Rico's wife said, Zach, he's been dying to get a picture with you all day. And so he'd stop. He signed two jerseys for Manchester City jerseys. You know, Pedro Santos is coming out, and Pedro's like, hey, can you take pictures of my kids next? And he goes, no. And takes pictures with Rico's kid, and it's like, and then Pedro comes over, and you know they got their pictures, and they had their, and then another guy comes up. It's like, hey, you know, can you take? And even while he's going down the tunnel, you know, he's still on, and just a nice guy, and you can't wish for more success for someone like that. So, I'm interested to hear your reactions.
Yeah, lay it on us, bro.
Yeah, anything like Will Hesmer?
mine is a little different. So there was this guy by the name of Duncan Outen that I'm sure everyone is familiar with.
Oh, Dunks.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. Right.
Who's that guy?
He was on this podcast many times. So we did a thing for a while, Sam, where we did the video interviews in the locker rooms.
Yeah, the golden shin guard.
Which, I know where you're going.
Well,
wait a second.
This,
I think I know this one.
I was talking to another player by the name of Emilio Renteria.
Oh, yes. Emilio, I know this story.
Emilio Renteria, who was just callously robbed in a Champions League game by a referee with no sense of humor who would not allow him to score a goal while wearing a jersey that had no number on the back of it, because he'd been bloodied, I want to say, by one of the...
Very bloodied.
Yeah. So, anyway, great player. I enjoyed Emilio Renteria and his shoe phone celebrations and his dancing with the corner... He was great. But Emilio, we were interviewing him after a game because he'd had a particularly good game. I don't remember against who. And his English was not great, but he was doing a little bit of English, and they had a translator there. Meanwhile, Sam has a camera on a tripod, and Sam is standing there pushing the button, and I'm talking. Duncan, meanwhile, is behind the camera doing every insinuation he can to let us know that Emilio Renteria is hung like a racehorse. And I'm not exaggerating when I tell you he was doing a thing where it made it look like he had an elephant's trunk as a nose. He, at one point, was just, like, patting the side of his knee, the inside of his knee. And then he proceeded to point at the tripod, as if no one was getting this. He pointed at the tripod, and then at Emilio, and then back at the tripod. And then Emilio, I'm laughing. Emilio's laughing. Everybody's laughing. The whole team is gathered around watching me and Emilio, poor Emilio and Taria, try to talk about whatever happened in this game while Duncan Outen proceeded to describe his anatomy. And all I can tell you is this, and I will give you no more info than this, but I've spoken with someone in the medical community who can confirm that story is accurate. That's all I have to say.
You know, that's the most professional version I've ever heard of that story. I applaud your commitment, sir.
He didn't use the quote that Duncan said.
No, he did not.
Either.
He is the consummate professional. That's why you're the one that went on to a career in radio.
I don't know if hung like a horse is PG, but sure, we'll go with it.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
The other one would be the quote? Tripod interviewing a tripod.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's a tripod interviewing a tripod.
Yes, that's the phrase.